my side. I lost some feeling, girl, I'm jaded.
Welcome back to Big T Energy. You are listening to part two. So if you have not heard part one, go ahead and head on over to 6 signs that your relationship is headed towards a divorce / breakup so that part two makes more sense. In the second half, we continue to break down Dr. John Gottman's book, The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. Dr. John Gottman is a highly decorated psychologist who has been studying marriage for over 50 years. And he's known as the marriage expert. So it only makes sense to tune into his studies to figure out how we can make our relationships better. Angie and I had so much fun breaking down his information and sharing our very personal and hilarious stories as to how we can relate. Like someone's ex-husband shitting his pants on their wedding night. Maybe you can relate, but hopefully not. Let's get into it. Yeah, I'm crazy. Maybe you're right. Okay, part two. So we, just before, you guys were talking about Dr. John Gottman's book, The 7 Principles to Making a Marriage Work. And by the way, it doesn't always have to be marriage. Like, I'm not married, but I'm in a relationship, and it's, like, super helpful. And by the way, if you don't know about Dr. John Gottman, get to the first episode. Y'all are kind of out of whack here. But basically, we're going through one of the chapters where he can predict divorce through 6 signs. So in the first episode, we talked about the first sign, which is a harsh startup. The second sign, which is the 4 horsemen, which is criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. And then next after that is flooding. And then we got into the 4th sign, which is body language. And that one was fucking crazy, dude. So they were talking about literally when your body is in like fight or flight mode. Okay. So our heartbeat as women is like around 82. Mm-hmm. So imagine double that.
Right.
165. You're just like
running from a fucking bear at that point.
I know. But while talking to your partner in a relationship. And we all have a fight or flight response. That's another thing too. So think about that. Like that's always that. I feel like that's not going to even make it worse because either you're fighting them even more because of this, because of your like physiological response, or you're fucking like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And like someone who's going to keep threatening relationships is like, you've been in a relationship before where someone's like, I'm fucking done with you.
Right. Everything, they're going to leave all the time. It's like, oh my God, then fucking leave.
I remember the first time my ex-husband mentioned divorce and I'm sure my heartbeat went to 165.
Really?
I was like, how long has he been thinking this? Why did he say that? Does he really want this? Does he mean that? You know what I mean? And he was like, I'm going to go over to my buddy's house. And he went over there for like an hour and then came back. Right. And like the whole time he was gone, I was freaking out because I'm sitting there going like, well, you just said you want a divorce. Now you're going to leave. And then he starts saying it again and then be gone for like 2 hours. Right. And say it again and be gone for like 4 hours. And it was just keep doubling. And that's why towards the end, he would like just say it. And then he'd be gone, like, he was gone for like an entire fucking week. Yeah.
So any shit would be burnt on the front lawn so, when he came back, you little bitch.
So the thing is, though, what sucks about that is by threatening a relationship that you want to end, the person really does believe you.
In the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning. Like they think that you really want to leave, mm-hmm. which creates uncertainty and unsafety mm-hmm. in a relationship. And when someone does not feel like they can be themselves and they feel safe, they tend to build up walls. They tend to draw back. And obviously this makes things worse.
Yeah.
Right. And then as you keep continuing to say it, it's going to get worse to where the person will leave you because they're like, you keep saying it. So obviously you want it.
Yeah. So bye.
2, what happened with me is I just was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. You ain't going fucking anywhere. You just like talk shit.
Yeah, well, I realized it was like a method of controlling and manipulation.
Yeah.
Because he realized that if he told me that he was leaving, then I would be like, oh, no, what? Huh?
Yeah.
And try to like, you know, I'd I felt like I definitely would cave in and give in more.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is why I think a lot of people do that as a manipulation tactic, because they don't like where a situation is headed or how the outcome is. It's not the outcome that they wanted. You know what I mean? So they're trying to win when nobody's winning. You know what I mean? So they decide that they're going to throw that little fucking sprinkle out there to get you to be like, oh, never mind. Like, okay, you can win this argument. We'll do it your way. Well, you know what I mean? Forget that I said anything. Forget about my feelings and my wants and my needs.
Correct.
Just please stay.
Yes.
Get out of here.
I know. And then, or the third reason why they're saying it is because they have a fear of abandonment, which I definitely struggled with when I was younger a lot. And sometimes when you have this fear of abandonment, you literally manifest itself in your own relationship. So I think sometimes people with fear of abandonment, it's not all the time, but I think sometimes they sit there and go, if I leave this person first, I won't get hurt.
Right.
If I leave this person, they can't leave me.
Yep.
If I strike first, maybe the blow will be less.
Yeah.
And that is something that I really had to work hard on, because I was realizing that I was not getting the love that I really wanted by threatening to leave relationships. And I was, that's really fucking unhealthy.
Yeah.
And I kept being like, people will always leave me, when in reality,
you were leaving them.
I was leaving them.
Yeah.
I was literally like doing it to myself, which is the saddest part, because I've had therapists, you know, talk to me before and be like, the ironic thing is you don't want people to leave you, but then you push them away. You know what I mean?
It's part of my charm.
Yeah. Like, that way it makes me so great.
Ding.
But they were like, you literally are doing it to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and what I would even do sometimes is, I wouldn't always leave them first. There'd be sometimes I would just shut down, become a little bit more mean, you know, draw back on the physical love and attention, and like get to the point to where hopefully they would break up with me. And then again, that was so, like, you know, this is young 20s, but fuck. Like,
yeah.
And so that is also another thing that like fuels the uncertainty in relationships. And that's something that needs to be worked on.
Yeah.
Too. So. But yeah, the first time I remember hearing that, I was like, heart just like nonstop. And now someone says it, I feel like you, like, bitch, go.
Yeah. Let me help you pack your shit, you dirty little bitch.
To the left, to the left. Look. Okay, so the next sign. So we're on the fifth sign now. This is a big one. And I didn't realize this too. Well, they're all really good. But failed repair attempts. Okay. Let me explain. It takes time for the four horsemen and the flooding that comes in their wake to overrun a relationship. And yet divorce and ending relationships can so often be predicted by listening to a single conversation between newlyweds. How can this be? The answer is by analyzing any disagreement the couple has. You get a really good sense of their pattern, which is unlikely to change unless they receive the right sort of help. A crucial part of a couple's pattern is whether their repair attempts are successful or they fail. Repair attempts, as I describe, are efforts the couple makes, like, hey, let's take a break. Hey, wait, I need to calm down right now. These are efforts that the couple makes to de-escalate the tension during a very touchy discussion to put the brakes on so they can prevent flooding from happening.
Mm.
So we talked about this.
Yeah.
Already too. Repair attempts can literally save a marriage, not just because they decrease the emotional tension between spouses, but because by lowering the stress level, they also prevent your heart from racing and making you feel flooded. When the four horsemen rule a couple's communication, repair attempts often don't even get noticed. Especially when you're feeling flooded, you're not really able to hear any type of verbal white flag. In unhappy marriages, a feedback loop develops between the four horsemen and the failed repair attempts. The more contemptuous and defensive the couple are with each other, the more flooding occurs and the harder it is to hear and respond to a repair attempt. And since the repair is not heard, the contempt and defensiveness just keep getting heightened, making flooding more pronounced. Wait. I'm like literally starting. There's so much written in here. There we go. And since the repair is not heard, the contempt and defensiveness just keep getting heightened, making it more pronounced, which makes it more difficult to hear the next repair attempt until the partner finally withdraws. So it literally goes in this loop.
Right.
Over and over again. Because you were talking before how you're like, hey, I need a break.
Yeah.
And then when that person's like, no, and they keep going, that's the loop. That continues.
Yeah.
Right. That was like, keep going on and on and on. Cause you were literally throwing out repair attempts.
Yeah.
Hey, I need a break. Hey, let's calm down.
Before I slap you, let me walk away.
that's probably not the best thing to say. He said, that's why I can often predict a divorce by hearing only one discussion between a husband and wife.
That's fucking crazy. Damn.
The failure of a repair attempt is an accurate marker for an unhappy future. The presence of the four horsemen alone predicts divorce with an 82% accuracy rate. So if you have the four horsemen just continuous in your relationship and all your problems and your talks, 82% accuracy rate to get divorced. But he said, when you add in the failure of repair attempts, the accuracy rate in this situation reaches into the 90s now.
Damn.
So it increases, which sucks. He said, this is because some couples who trot out the four horsemen when they argue hold on. When you add in the failure. Oh, yeah. Okay. He said, when you trot out the four horsemen when they argue and they are also successful at repairing the harm. This does not make any sense. Sorry, guys. I like copy and paste this from a book. So let's see here. He said 84% of newlyweds who were super high on the four horsemen, but they had really effective repair attempts, were in stable, happy marriages still 6 years later.
Oh, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. He said, because there was repair attempts at the end. There was like a conclusion to them.
Right.
Like they might have had like some criticism, they might have had some stonewalling, whatever, but it didn't get to the point to where it was flooding. So he said, that's a really good thing when you insert those repair attempts. But if there were no repair attempts or if the attempts were not able to be heard, the marriage faced serious danger. In emotionally intelligent marriages, he said he hears a wide range of successful repair attempts. So if he gives examples, he said there's this couple that they have a little like 5-year-old son and he always would stick out his tongue in a certain way, you mm-hmm. know? And so when he said there was one time the husband and wife were having an argument and it was getting out of hand, the wife stuck out her tongue at the husband like that. And he started to laugh.
Oh, that's funny.
And they thought it was cute.
Yeah.
And they kind of both calmed down. Now, here's the thing that I think of. If you have a lot of contempt for someone, you're going to find that rude as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you can't stand anything that they do and everything that they do is kind of like making you mad, when they stick out their tongue, you're going to want to rip it off. Right?
Yeah.
So like, but you have to realize that's in a repair attempt. Like think about if you're just sitting there having like an argument and your couple like,
I would die laughing.
Right?
Yeah.
Or like we've had some times before where he'll just like fart and I'll just be like, like so loud. And I'm just like, really? And I'll be like, God damn, that was bad. That was like, that's good. And he's like, I know, right? Like, and so then it kind of like gets us calmed down.
Breaks it up a little bit.
So he said, that's one of them. He said like couples will tell jokes. You know what I mean? Like if you have a healthy friendship, he said like at the core of it, right? If you don't like really like just fucking hate each other, like these repair attempts, like, hey, I need a break. Hey, you seem upset. You know, hey, I'm sorry. He's even said saying sorry is like a repair attempt
mm-hmm.
as well. Asking for a kiss. I know there was this one couple that would be like, they would always make a joke like, are we about to have sex right now? You know what I mean? In like the midst of things. And so like, I think it's good. And so maybe one thing that can be helpful is like you and your partner can find something that you realize in a very tense situation can help repair it.
Yeah.
And maybe get both people from ramping up to 100 back down to that zero-ish level and be like, okay, let's refocus. right?
Yeah.
So I think that's good because that right there, having like good repair attempts can keep it from like literally going in this loop and feeling like it's irreversible.
Right.
Or not going anywhere.
Yeah. I'm now trying to think like what repair attempts that would like, you know what I mean? Cause, but I also think it depends too. Like it all depends on the situation. For our repair attempts, which I guess I didn't even realize, is ours is like, I'm going to need to take a break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And here's the thing too. If you have like a fear of abandonment, make sure that person's like, not from our relationship, from this situation. Conversation
yeah.
right now. And what him and I do is whoever like initiates the break, they're the person to, they always go back into the other room. Or they'll call the other person, mm-hmm. right? They initiate the break. So they're the one who reinitiates like
the conversation.
Being in contact and yeah. then they let the other person talk.
Okay.
Cause think about it, like sometimes it can boil down to control.
Right. Like they're cutting it off
and then
to like shut you up and then come back and then they start talking again. That's correct. Not fair.
No.
Like, okay.
So Austin's therapist told him specifically like, listen, if you shut down the conversation because you need a break, it's now your job to reinitiate that conversation. You need to go back in and say, hey, are you good to talk? And then once your partner's like, yes, you let her talk.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she's like, you can if you want. You know what I mean? But you give them that because that can seem... start to be controlling, right? So that's another thing too. So that's so good. I kind of like the tongue one, but that's like this.
Because it depends. Like it depends on like the thing because
it does.
Yeah. Or like the asking for a kiss. Like depending on my mood, if you ask me for a kiss, I'm going to pull my pants down and give you my bare ass. Like you can kiss my fucking literal ass. You know, like there's just certain yeah. times where that would work and then other times where it would not.
Yeah.
So I guess you just got to fucking read the room, Tina. Like,
I guess that too.
Yeah.
I think sometimes realizing what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's the way sometimes it's said. Like, I guess that's sometimes the way it's said.
Yeah.
Like if you're being cute and playful with the tongue, it's like, you know, right. But if you're like, I don't even know how to stick my tongue out mean.
That's disgusting. If somebody tries to stick their tongue out being for real, that goes like back to the baby talk. Don't fucking do that shit.
I can't remember the last time I stuck my fucking tongue out until now. I feel so stupid doing it too. Yeah. I'm like, am I even doing it right? Because as a kid, you were like a pro at sticking your tongue right. out. What if someone went like this, like, man,
like in a fight?
Yeah. Like,
they're getting punched. That's what.
Because you know how clowns do the thing where they put their like hand on their nose yeah. and stick out their tongue and like, oh, do the bullwinkle thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm not, I guess to me, like I've never been like super playful like that in the midst of a fucking intense argument.
Yeah. I like to sprinkle sarcasm in there. I think that maybe that. That's a repair attempt. Like I'd be like, you got something on your teeth.
Oh my God. I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Can you fix that before we continue
talking? Oh my God. Do I have something in my teeth right now, bitch? Because I swear.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just trying to think of things.
What if you're just like sitting there like in the midst of an argument and it's like, fuck, you're so hot. Do you think that would come across mean? I think it's the way you say it. Like,
I feel like a girl could say that to a guy.
I think so too.
Then that would end the argument because you could just go to have sex. Where if a guy says it to a girl, she can be like, shut the fuck up.
True. I actually kind of like, are we about to fuck right now?
Right.
Because I actually like that. I think a guy or a girl says that. Like, I would take that. Like, if we're just, and I'm just like sitting there, you know, and he's like, are we about to fuck right now? Like, I think that'd be cute.
Yeah.
But I think it's the way he says it.
Right.
I also realize like Austin's not really goofy like that. He's not like a funny guy.
No, he's very serious.
I know. So that's why I think the, hey, we need a break works.
Yeah.
Cause like he's the type of guy where if I would do it to him, I feel like he would be like, no, this is serious. And I'd be like, okay.
And now I want to go jump off a cliff.
Repair attempt fail.
Right. And that's the worst.
So I guess, yeah, I guess it like figure out what works for your relationship. So there you go. The last sign, the sixth sign, bad memories. So I actually remember reading this one and I was like, that makes me sad.
When a relationship gets consumed by negativity, it not only affects the couple's present and it affects the present and the future life together, and it puts everything at risk. Sorry, I like literally took pictures of this book and then like copy and pasted it. So, their past.
Do better next time.
Okay. I know. Shut the fuck up. Their pasts are also in danger too. So when he interviewed couples, he said he usually asked about the history of their marriage. And he has found that over and over again, the couples who are deeply entrenched in a negative view of their spouse and their marriage will often rewrite their past. Based on their answers to the questions about their early courtship, their wedding, their first year together, he can predict their chances of divorce, even if he's not privy to their current feelings for each other. Most couples enter marriage with high hopes and super great expectations. In a happy marriage, couples tend to look back on their early days fondly. Even if the wedding didn't go off perfectly, they're likely to remember the highlights rather than the low points. So I remember reading after all of that, he gives examples of couples, right? Okay, so there's this couple and the husband is a doctor. And the wife is a stay-at-home mom. And the doctor is gone all the fucking time to the point to where there is 100% contempt on his end, like towards his wife, because she always wants him home. And he's like, I have a job to do. Like he literally lives at the hospital. He gets mad. He would get mad at her when she would come and visit him and try to bring him food and bring the kids there. Yeah.
So he got a nurse girlfriend or something? No. Like, why are you mad, bro?
No, he just like, he literally gave his life to his job. He literally was barely home that he didn't even know his dog's name. He didn't know his dog's name. Like Dr. Gottman asked him stuff like, you don't know your dog's name? He's like, no, he didn't know the gate code to get into the back of the house or anything. Like that's how.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was wondering, like, you know what I mean? Like, so he, Dr. Gottman was kind of like, this is not good. Yeah. Right. But then he asked him to recount the first time they met. And the doctor started talking about how he started courting his wife and realized that right away, that was the type of woman he wanted to be with. And he realized that she was not going to make it easy on him, that she had been through some things and that she was someone to work hard for. And he said he was realized at that moment that he met her, he was going to put in the work to be with her and that he was willing to like stick around. And she was like, you realize that about me? And he's like, yeah. And I knew I wanted to be with you for a really long time. She's like, I know right away.
A really long time.
Well, I'm just saying like when you first met, okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's like, I knew this is something that I wanted to pursue and that I wanted to like see how it would go. And she, I guess from her past that she's, you know, been through some things and she had some hardships. So he knew that he was going to have to work past those things and be there for her. And like her hearing this and the positivity from the beginning of their courtship and how much he thought about her in such a, you know, high opinion and high light, that like really rekindled things in their relationship. And like Dr. Gottman realized that there was hope and there was a good foundation to work through.
Got you.
There was, when they look back at the history, it wasn't all bad.
Right.
He also said there was a newlywed couple. This is the craziest part. There was a newlywed couple who just got married. And he asked them to recount their wedding. And it was like, well, first of all, she was late to the wedding. And she's like, oh yeah, well your mom did this. And they literally, everything they look back on, it was everything was super negative. And they literally just got married. They literally thought everything they thought about their spouse was in a negative light. Everything. Bad memories about everything. So I'm sure contempt has a lot to do with that too. Right. So, it says, yeah, literally no matter what, in a happy relationship, they can look back on things with happy memories. So they tend to look at the good and not the bad. He said the same, he said, when people remember how positively they felt earlier on, how excited they were when they first met and how much admiration they had for each other, this really helps out the relationship. But when they talk about tough times they've had and they glorify the struggles that they've been through, drawing strength from the adversity that they've weathered together, this is helpful. But when a marriage is not going well, history gets rewritten often for the worst.
Now only she's going to crawl the 30 minutes that they were late getting to the wedding ceremony. Or he focuses on all the time that she spent talking to the best, to his best man at the rehearsal dinner, or flirting with his friend, as it seems, you know, to him now.
Yeah.
Like before, maybe like in a highlight, you know, in a happy moment, he's like, oh, she's just being nice to my buddy.
Right.
But when he wants to think of everything negative, he's like, that little slut was flirting with my friend. Right. He said, so another sad sign is when either or both partners find it difficult to remember like certain memories too. And it becomes, has become so unimportant or painful that they have literally just let it fade away.
Dang.
So for example, remember the other day when you and I were watching the video of Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber?
Yeah.
And she was like, do you remember our first kiss? And he was like, yeah. He's like, and she's like, can you talk about it? He's like, you talk about it.
Because he didn't actually remember it.
He might have not even remembered it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? No. Like, can you imagine asking Glenn that, like, hey, like recounting, like if he was to recount the first time you all met, he's like, I don't remember. Or your first date together. He couldn't even tell you that.
He got me this little light up thing with the grid coordinates to the place that he took me on our first date for Christmas. Yeah. And it, like, at the bottom, it says like where my life began, and it has like the grid coordinates and like the Google map, like thing of it. And I was like, how do you even like, I remember the date, but I have no fucking clue like where you took me. Yeah. Cute, right?
That's a, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Now I understand there's going to be people with bad memories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And who might not remember certain things, but like how embarrassing would it be? Like, oh my God, how'd you guys meet? And like, they're just like online.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, which app? I forget which one, but like, I think we hung out with her friends and.
So our first kiss was not great because.
You and his?
We went out. It was girls' night plus Glenn. It was me and the girl from Texas. And he was like,
oh my God, I remember this. You were drunk.
And I was drunk as shit. And he was like trying to teach me how to dance. And he's so fucking tall, 6'3" with cowboy boots on. I think I had like flip flops. And then I just like kissed him.
Yeah, you're drunk.
And I was just like, I cannot believe I just did that. I was mortified that I did that.
Yeah. So I remember specifically that night you were texting me and you were like, I'm getting drunk with my girlfriends. And I was like, oh, have fun. And you're like, oh my God, this Glenn guy is like so sexy. I'm like, who the fuck is Glenn?
Yeah.
Like,
we had just gone on our first date like a couple days before that.
Didn't even like really hear of him much. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I know who this guy is. Like, who is this guy? And I was so excited for you.
Yeah.
I think it would suck because like Austin and I look like we've talked about like how we met multiple times and like, you know, like the whole night together. And it's so fun looking back on it. But I can only imagine if he was just like, God, that would break my heart. If he started to be really negative about it and was just like, yeah. So I started messaging you on Bumble and I was like, this little bitch, you know, like what, you know, I'm just saying. And you were super boring and like, you know, I don't know like what he would say. Yeah. Right. But, and then he was like, then I had to hang out with your friends, which was so fucking annoying because like literally I just wanted to go on a date with you. And I felt like you're playing hard to get. And can you imagine? You know what I'm saying?
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Because we never looked at it that way. It was just like, yeah, I thought you were gorgeous. And like, I was so excited that we matched. And I immediately had to tell you about that I matched with your friend, Angie. And I was like, I know, we were both laying in bed. Like,
little do you know, Angie sent me after you looking for you.
I was like, I'm like, but that said a lot about you. You know what I mean? It's like, you showed a lot of integrity. I would hate to get to a place where I was like, you only told me that because, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how fucking horrible is that?
Right. Or to try to lie about it.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
When you can't even remember, or you look back and all the memories, like your wedding day, like as stressful as it can be sometimes, like it should be a beautiful day. Like you should be able to look back on it and like, ooh, that wrecks.
Yep.
I'm realizing I have looked back at a wedding day before, at both wedding days before, and definitely looked at them back in some contempt and had more of a negative view of it. Now I can look at them both positively.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely by the time the relationships were ending, you just think of everything from the beginning and you're just like, ugh, gross. You know what I mean? Like we didn't even have sex that night. your friend like
threw up.
Yeah.
So, you know, just
inappropriately
whatever.
Touched my sister. You know what I mean? Gosh. Well, it was worse than that, but there was, that's for her story. That's for her to tell, not me. But like, you know, everyone was like breaking the hotel and I had to pay for it. Yeah. Oh yeah. That was like one of the first ones. But then I look back though, and like, I can look back now and be like, that was a really fun time. You know what I mean?
It was fun breaking all that shit. Really enjoyed it.
But I'm saying it was a really good time with family and friends, and like, it worked out the way it worked out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But even the second one, like, you know, before, oh my God.
Wasn't he sick?
He shit his pants.
Officer Doofy.
The second one got food poisoning at a really like expensive ass steakhouse in Vegas. And like him and like three members of his family got super, super fucking sick. And we did have sex. And then I remember like I woke up and he was like in the other toilet. Like we had multiple bathrooms.
Fancy.
Cosmopolitan. I paid big bucks for that room. Yes, I paid for it. And so like, I just remember him hugging the toilet and like, I ended up waking up in the middle of the night, just making sure he was okay. And we were up for a while. And so I ran him a bath and he hopped into the bath and he was like, can I tell you something? I was like, yeah, what's up? He's like, dude, this is like, you can't tell who it was. This is so embarrassing. Obviously,
tell
you guys
the
don't
world,
know who
bucko.
He is. You guys don't know who he is.
I'm going to tag him.
But he doesn't have fucking social media.
I know.
he was like, dude, he's like, you know how when you like puke so much that sometimes it literally comes out the other end? I was like, oh yeah, I've been there before. He's like, yeah, it literally like came out in my underwear. I was like, oh fuck. I was like, that sucks. You know what I mean? I was like, I've been there before. Like even as a kid, you know what I mean? Like, so you're like literally sitting on a toilet and puking in a trash can.
Yeah.
That's the best option. I'm not shitting in a trash can.
No, absolutely not. You know, or in my pants.
Right. Or in my pants. Yeah. So I was like, well, what'd you do with them? He's like, I yeeted them over the balcony. I was like, what?
So there's poopy underwear out there. Just put them in the garbage, man. Tie the garbage off.
You yeeted them over the balcony? And he's like, yeah. And we were at the Cosmopolitan and literally over our balcony was the Bellagio fountain.
Oh my gosh. What a...
But all I think is like, if there wasn't much weight to them, those little motherfuckers probably floated down onto someone else's balcony. So they woke up with shitty drawers on their balcony.
Could you imagine?
But now I laugh about it. But before... When you know, when you look back on things, you're like,
you shit your fucking pants on our wedding night.
Oh, it's so disgusting, you know? Yeah. And then he ended up getting mad at me the next morning because I didn't take care of him the way his mom did.
Well, I'm not your fucking mother, bucko.
So, but you see what I'm saying? Like, that makes me sad. So make sure that you guys can like, make sure that the contempt doesn't literally overcome you.
Right.
And all your memories, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
You're going to have bad memories. That's fine.
Everybody does.
But look for the good in things.
Just being able to be self-aware enough to like realize that if you do start to look at things mainly negative.
Yeah.
To like, it's time to fix it. Like go to couples counseling or sit down, talk about it. You got to figure it out.
Yes. That downward spiral can be
a bitch.
Yeah.
Because it can happen very fucking quickly.
And you gotta be careful. You gotta get out of it.
Yeah. It's like the fucking straw or feather that broke the camel's back. You know, like you just keep letting shit go. And
yes.
then you all of a sudden you get to a point of no return.
Yes.
You're just like, okay, I'm done.
Well, that's like, just let the flooding get to you.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, you're literally drowning.
Because of the flooding.
Get it? So at the end of all this, he says the end draws near. When a marriage gets to the point where the couple has literally rewritten their history, when their minds and their bodies make it virtually impossible to communicate and repair their current problems, the relationship is almost bound to fail without the right help. The partners find themselves constantly on red alert because they always do combat. The marriage has now literally become tormented. The understandable result, they withdraw from the relationship. Sometimes a couple at this end stage of marriage will come in for counseling. on the surface, it may seem like nothing much is wrong because they don't argue, act contemptuous, or stonewall. The four horsemen are completely absent. Instead, they talk calmly and distantly about their relationship and their conflicts. An experienced therapist could easily assume that their problems don't really run very deep, but actually one or both of them have already disengaged emotionally from the marriage. Our lab studies indicate that these emotionally distant couples do divorce, but they split after an average of 16 years.
Damn.
Compared to 5.5 years of, compared to 5.6 years of couples whose conflict discussions are overrun by the four horsemen. Holy shit. So what he's saying there is, y'all, is that couples who get to the point to where they literally just drift apart after all this, like the harsh startup, the flooding, the four horsemen, the bad memories, they literally just living separate lives. He said they will go to therapy and like the therapist will just kind of treat them on the surface because they don't know all these deep rooted issues because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of stuff there because they both just literally disengage. They will continue to live on their lives and be married for an average of 16 years. It's a long time to be married in misery.
Time.
Versus the couple who like comes into the therapist and it's very obvious that they're having criticism, they're stonewalling, there's contempt, there's defensiveness. Their marriages might last 5 or 6 years. When it's more obvious to the therapist. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Some people leave a marriage literally by divorcing. Others do so by staying together and leading parallel lives. Whatever the route, there are four final stages that signal the death of a relationship. The couple sees their marital problems as severe. Talking things over literally seems useless. Partners try to solve problems on their own. The couple lead parallel lives and loneliness sets in. When a couple gets to the last stage or one or both partners may have an affair. But this betrayal is usually a symptom of a dying marriage, not the cause. So they're saying that
it was over before that should happen.
Correct. The end of the marriage could have been predicted long before either spouse strayed. Too often couples begin to seek help for their marriage after their partner hit trout. Hit the bloody waters, right? So they always seek help too late. The warning signs were almost always early on if they had known what to look for. You can see seeds of trouble in what partners actually say to each other, which is the prevalence of a harsh startup, the four horsemen, or the unwillingness to accept influence, right? The failure of repair attempts, or the physiological reactions, the flooding that happens, or four, the pervasive negative thoughts about their marriage and entire relationship. Any of these suggest that the relationship is over.
Dang.
Yeah. But boom, guys, listen, it's not over till it's over. This is what
ain't over till the fat lady sings.
This is what he reminds you of. He says, as bleak as it sounds, I'm convinced that far more marriages can be saved than currently are. Even a marriage that is about to be revived. Even a marriage at the bottom can be revived with the right intervention. Sadly, most marriages at this stage will get the wrong kind of help. Well-meaning therapists will deluge the couples with advice, negotiating their differences and improving their communication. At one time, I would have done the same thing. At first, when I figured out how to predict divorce, I thought the key to saving, like he thought it was the key to saving marriages, was like, just communicate better.
Right.
Just communicate better. Which honestly, when you think about it, that's what a lot of people say.
Yeah.
Oh, you have problems?
Communication.
Communicating?
Key.
Communicate more. So now he's realizing that's not the case. All that was necessary was to teach people how to argue without being overridden by the four horsemen and without getting flooded, and then have repair attempts that would succeed. And now they can work on their differences instead of being like, hey guys, just negotiate. But like so many experts before me, he was wrong. I was not able to crack the code by saving marriages until he started to analyze what went right in happy marriages. After tracking the lives of happily married couples for as long as 20 years, I now know that the key to reviving or divorce-proofing a relationship is not simply how you handle disagreements, but how you engage with each other when you're not fighting. So that's really important too. So although my seven principles will guide you in coping with conflict, the basis of my approach, which forms the three principles, is to strengthen the friendship and trust at the heart, or at the heart of every marriage. So the biggest, like one thing he talks about for an entire chapter is being friends.
Yeah.
Literally you have to be friends.
Yeah.
He said, if you do not like the person that you're with, it is not going to work out. If you do not feel like there is a friendship, they should be your best friend.
You should want to have fun.
You want to have fun. Things. You should want to know things about them. He said one of the saddest things was like asking his part, like when he had partners in there and asking like, well, what's her favorite cookies or what's her favorite movie? And the partner's like, I don't know. I don't care. Like, they weren't even friends anymore. Like, it became so disconnected.
Yeah.
And obviously having friendship and then trust, those are at the heart of any marriage, he's saying. Bolstering your friendship is so critical in a large part because it fuels the romance, the passion, and great sex that we all hope for that a marriage will provide. He said the funny thing is too, is he said men and women are more alike than they think. He said 85% of men and women need a good solid friendship in order to have sexual connection.
Because it's easy to fuck, but it's not easy to fuck with a connection.
I think us women always just assume that men can just like fuck and be fine, but that's different.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't mean that they might like it or have that connection, right? So he literally said we're the same in that regard. Yeah. That they need that strong friendship. And he said, in fact, when a couple comes to me complaining that sex has been routine, it's infrequent, or virtually non-existent, I don't start by handing them a sex manual. Instead, I guide them through the first three principles so they can reinforce and rediscover the camaraderie that brought them together in the first place. A strength that couples friendship not only stokes the fire, but also foretells the relationship for the future. Right?
Right.
So all these things can be fixed. He's telling you right now, y'all, if you have all this shit, you can fix things. The problem is it takes two people.
Yep. You both got to want it and work for it.
Have you ever been in a relationship before where you feel like you're the only one like trying to make it work?
Yeah. And I've also been in a relationship before when I'm the one who
was over it,
and didn't want to work.
And the other person was trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's hard.
Yeah.
On both ends.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, you can literally do everything you can till you're blue in the face. But if the other partner is not working with you.
Right. And it was more so, it wasn't that they like didn't want, like mine was, I didn't care enough to stay in the relationship. You know what I mean? I was just like over it and didn't want it, period. Whereas when it was the other way around, it was more so that they were so toxic and shit that they just didn't see a problem. You know what I mean? They were content and happy with the way that they were and the way that the relationship was. And I wasn't. And they were unwilling to like change and work for it to make it like an actual partnership, you know?
So they were trying to repair it, but then not?
Well, no, they didn't even want to repair it because they didn't see a problem with anything.
Yeah.
With like the way that they were like, you know, emotionally abusive and stuff like that. Like they were completely content with the way that the relationship was. They saw nothing wrong with the way that they treated me and all the things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but they kept wanting to make the relationship work.
Right. They want to stay in the relationship, but they don't want to put any actual work into it and like I see do better. So it was like they were unwilling to change.
But that's totally different than this, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because imagine imagine, you know, you and your spouse are having a really hard time, right? Mm-hmm. And like you realize that you were going in this loop and the repair attempts have been unsuccessful. And you're like, hey, I really think we should talk to someone. It's kind of like having a mediator there. This is really important to me. And your spouse is like, no, fuck that shit.
Yeah. But I feel like I've heard that a lot of times where like women are having issues with their relationship, but the men are just like, it's almost like they're blindsided. They're like, I don't understand. Like, I didn't know that there was a problem. Like they don't, you know what I mean? They don't see the problems. And it's like,
Is it because they're just lazy and don't want to put any effort into their relationship? So they see no problem because they just don't fucking
because they don't really want to try.
You know, it's like more of just a lazy thing. Like they don't want to actually put in any effort and they're okay with just the, you know, like basically just going through the motions.
Yeah.
I where hope women that's not are the case. Where mainly women are not okay with going through the motions. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because women want like more.
No, yeah. I mean, I would think no one want to go through that. That's a horrible fucking feeling.
No, but I've known a lot of couples that are like that where like, and typically, again, it's not always, but typically like from my experiences, like it's the men who are like confused and don't understand what the problem is.
But I think that's the craziest thing. And it's actually the saddest part, I think sometimes, unless they're just playing like the dumb idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Purposely, because they don't want to deal with it, which is also sucks. But for a man to be so in shock, like, I didn't think there was issues. I didn't think we were wrong. That means he's so out of touch and so disconnected from his partner,
right,
and their relationship. That's like, do you say you care about her, but what have you done to show her that? Like, do you even listen to her?
Right.
Do you just tune her out? Like, I don't know. God bless you.
Thank you. Sorry.
You're good. But man, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
So, well, there you guys go. It's not over till it's over. I highly recommend getting this book, which is the biggest thing. Now, here's the thing that I said I would bring up at the end of the first episode. You know how they're talking about stonewalling?
Yeah.
And how men are more apt to stonewall than women?
Yeah.
He literally explains. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you would like to hear the remainder of the episode, please click the link in the caption below, which will bring you to the Patreon page for Big T Energy. We really appreciate all your support. And with your continued support through our Patreon page, we will eventually in the future be able to make this podcast free on all platforms for everyone to listen to. I'm feeling, girl, I'm jaded.